verses 12 and 13, Krishna gave us the two different types of devotees. The first type of devotee Krishna spoke about in verse number 12 is what is known as the Sakama Bhakta. Sakama means one who worships God with desires, with various or multiple kinds of desires. So in chapter 9, verse number 12, he spoke about this person who has vain hopes, vain actions and vain knowledge. The basic problem starts with the wrong knowledge. When we have wrong knowledge of this human form, when we have wrong knowledge about the purpose of religion or what is the real purpose of spirituality, when we have wrong knowledge about what is God, that wrong knowledge leads us to wrong type of desires. So he says, moga jnana, in the second line of verse 12, you see the word moga jnana, meaning when the knowledge itself is defective, when the knowledge itself is defective, what happens? Moga asha, the first line of verse number 12, meaning the desire itself becomes defective. Therefore, instead of worshipping God for the infinite goal, we worship God for all the finite goals, which gives us temporary happiness. That's why he says, the moga asha, the defective desires, lead us to moga karmana, defective actions. Thus, knowledge itself is our biggest problem. Our ignorance itself leads us to wrong desires, leads us to wrong actions. And it is said there are three ways in which we can learn wisdom. The first is by reflection, like what we are doing now. We receive this knowledge, we reflect upon the knowledge. So knowledge which is gained by reflection is the most noblest type of knowledge. That is the first way of attaining knowledge. The second is by imitation. We follow what others are doing and we just blindly follow. Of course, if you follow the right person is good, you follow the wrong people, then of course you also come to the wrong conclusion. So second type of knowledge is by imitation, which is the most easiest. And the third is by experience, which is the most bitterest. We go through all the ups and downs of life. Some people learn from it, it's okay. Some people still don't learn from it. They chase after all types of finite goals. They come to their own problems, but they still don't learn. They keep on chasing after one finite goal after the other. So therefore, in verse number 12, Krishna spoke about such type of people who never learn their lesson, who keep on chasing finite goals. Then in verse number 13, he spoke about the other type of devotees, the Mahatmanahas. Mahatmana here means those who use their discriminative power, who understand the very purpose of human life, who understand the pursuit of spirituality. And for these people, Krishna says, they worship me consistently with an undivided mind. So what happens to those people who have the wrong desires, wrong knowledge, and worship God for finite purposes? In verses 20 and 21 of chapter 9, he told us about the continuous journey that such people go through. What happens? They worship God with certain desires. To realize those desires, they go to various, upon death, they go to various lokas in heaven. They enjoy all those pleasures and desires because of their worship, because that is what they wanted. But when the punya karma gets exhausted, they come back to this world here. And now, that is verse 20 and 21. So that means the person keeps on revolving in this continuous cycle of birth and death. And we may say there is nothing wrong, but if we intelligently analyze such a lifestyle, number one, frequently we have come to this conclusion, there is no guarantee that when we come back, there is going to be a human birth again. There is no guarantee. Because of your desires, of the very base kind, of the very raw type of desires, you may not need a human body to satisfy those desires. So you can come back in any other form. Number one. Number two, once we keep on going on this path of desires, satisfying desires, it leads to more and more desires. Until the desires overrule our thinking capacity, our wisdom. The desires overpower us so much so that in order to satisfy these desires, we may resort to all kinds of adharmic practices, illegal practices, take shortcuts in order to satisfy these desires. And the other problem is when the desires keep on multiplying, physically the mind can multiply desires faster than your physical body can satisfy the desires. While you've satisfied one desire, your mind has already projected 20 other desires. So it is not easy to keep up with the desires of the mind. And what happens? There will come a point when you cannot satisfy your desires. Then what happens? Anger, frustration, all kinds of negative things come into your mind. So therefore, it is not to say it is wrong to have desires. But we must be very careful. It is okay, we have good desires, dharmic desires. We should slowly channelize our mind away to healthy desires and pursue those desires. So now, here in this verse 22 now, Krishna is speaking about, what about those people, the different type of people, the nishkama bhaktas, who do not worship God for their worldly desires. What happens to such kind of devotees? In verse 20 and 21, we already saw what happens to those devotees who worship God with desires. And now here he says, in verse 22, what happens to those devotees? See, we may think that if I don't ask God for anything, at least those devotees are okay. They ask God for something, they get it. That means something wrong with us. We don't ask God, then how are we going to satisfy our desires? That means something is wrong with our type of worship. If I don't tell God what I want, then how will I get what I want? Right? So, verse number 22, he wants to reassure you that it is not necessary for you to keep asking God for what you want. And this is a very important verse. It is said to be the very heart of the Gita. It is the very essence of the teachings of the Gita. So, here is a very strong promise also Lord is making to his devotees who worship him unconditionally, without asking for anything. Without asking God to satisfy our desires, here God is giving us a promise itself. And let us look at what he is saying here in the very essence. So, here in the previous two verses, 20 and 21, God is the means, world is the end. We worship God to attain worldly things, right? So God becomes the means and the world becomes the end. Whereas in this type of worship here in verse number 22, God is talking about the devotee who God is both the means and the end also. I worship God, He is the means and He is also the end. So to such a kind of devotee is a more superior devotee. And why do we say such a devotee is more superior? For one who God is both the means and the end. Why is such a devotee more superior?
No expectation.
Yes, no expectation through. What else? One-pointed devotion. See, most of the time, when we talk about means and ends, what is your mind obsessed with? Means or the end? The end is the one that you are obsessed with. So when God becomes your means and the world becomes your end, what are you obsessed with? The world. When God becomes your means and the end, what are you obsessed with? God. So such a kind of devotion is more superior because we are always obsessed with the end, the goal. Thus when God becomes the means and the end, your obsession is God itself. And such a kind of bhakti is called ananya bhakti, single pointed devotion, ananya bhakti. Whereas when we say single pointed, it does not mean that we forget about all our other goals. What it means here is that the other goals in life are not ignored, But all my other goals become subservient to what? My main goal called God. That means I will not forsake my main goal in order to reach my secondary goals. All the other goals become secondary. My main goal becomes God. That means in order to attain God, if I have to break any law of dharma, I won't do it. I will earn money legitimately. I will spend money legitimately. I will use my time and money to help people. Why? Because I want to reach my ultimate goal called God. So all other goals are there, but they become subservient to your main goals. Including what? Including all our duties and responsibilities. Just because God becomes our goal doesn't mean we forsake all our duties and responsibilities. We do our duties and responsibilities with what purpose? With the selfless purpose of attaining God. So therefore, we lead a more dharmic life. So here Krishna says, Ananyas ye jana chintayanto paryupasate. If you look at the first and the second line, ye janaha means those people. Now, what type of people is talking about here? Ye janaha meaning the nishkama bhaktas, the ones who worship him unconditionally. Paryupasate means they worship me. Such kind of devotees with unconditional devotion, they worship me. And for what purpose or how do they worship? The word ananyas, single-pointed goal. God is the means and God is the end. And when we say God is the means and the end, it means that we are, our goal is moksha. And we are not distracted by any other goals. And therefore he says chintayanto, which means constantly thinking about this goal called moksha. It becomes our primary goal. And thus they carry out their worldly duties also, not forgetting the primary goal. Now therefore, if we say we only worship God to attain him, then who is going to take care of my basic needs? Because the other type of devotees are constantly reminding God what they need. I need this, I need car, I need house, I need promotion, I need that. Here we are not asking God for anything. We are just worshipping and not asking for anything. So who is going to take care of my needs? Huh? We'll see. Tesham, he says Tesham in the third line, for those people, for those type of devotees, the what we call Nishkama Bhaktas, who worship him as a goal, and that also what type of worship? Not part-time worship, not weekend worship, not worship during major festivals, but what? Nitya, constant, daily, dedicated worship. So, this he is classifying such type of worship. It doesn't mean that because we go to temple every Sunday that we have become nitya bhaktas. No. He's talking about daily, everyday, remembering God in and through all your duties. Constantly remembering God, keeping God in your mind constantly as you go about doing your duties. So he says, Abhiyuktanam. Abhiyuktanam means steadfast in worship. Daily and steadfast in worship. So, the quality of the devotee is given here. A very steadfast devotee. And what does God do? He says, if you are such a kind of devotee who keeps God as his or her goal in life, who worships God and thinks of God constantly, that means every goal which I want to achieve must lead me to God. What is God's promise to us? Yoga shema vahamya aham. God says, I, aham, vahami means I will arrange, I will take care of what? Yoga shema. Yoga is, because there are all the actions that we do in life is only for two purposes. What is that? Every action that we do is basically for only two purposes. Whatever actions you do, either you are doing action to acquire something or to hold on to what you have, isn't it? If I have a house, I have to pay the installment, I have to work hard to hold on to my house, to my car. If I have children to take care, I have to work hard so I can provide for them. And at the same time, there are also a lot of desires that you don't have. You work hard to attain what you don't have. So here yoga means acquisition of what you don't have. The meaning of yoga here means acquisition of what you don't have. And kshema means preservation of what you have. This is Lord's promise to us. You don't have to ask Him. He knows what you need. He knows what you don't need. He knows what you have to hold on to. He knows what you have to let go of. You don't have to remind God. That's what He's telling you. Just worship Him. Keep Him as the goal. You don't have to ask Him for anything. And that does not mean that you don't get anything, because God Himself is giving you the promise here. Yoga Shema Vahami Aham. I will arrange, I will take care of your basic needs. Now that doesn't mean you will become Bill Gates tomorrow. Because when you are a devotee of God, what happens to your desires? The desires itself become less. Number one. Number two, your desires are for good things, for pure things. You are not desiring for materialistic things. So your desires itself become less. Your desires become for good things, to help people, to do good for others. So what does Krishna say? If the devotee has all these qualifications, if his desire is to attain moksha, such a strong desire will eliminate all other desires. All other worldly desires itself, not that we suppress these desires, very important. We should not suppress desires. Once you suppress desires, they will come out in one way or the other. But what he is saying here, naturally your desires for worldly things itself will drop. You will have no interest at all in worldly things. So, here he says, Anya is the focus goal, Ananya Bhakti. So, what happens now? He says, I will take care, I will give you what you don't have, I will preserve what you have. It becomes God's responsibility. Now, how? For a sannyasi, let's say a sannyasi has given up everything. All his worldly needs he has given up. What does he need? Food, shelter and clothing. For such a sannyasi, God says, I will provide. Don't worry. Because you surrender to me, now it becomes my duty. See, just like a child also surrenders to the parents, isn't it? The child doesn't think, tomorrow where I am going to get my breakfast, lunch and dinner. Tomorrow who is going to take care of me? Who is going to pay my school fees? Does a child ever think about this? Why? Because he has totally surrendered to his parents. He knows for sure his parents will take care of everything. Similarly, if we consider God as our father, as our mother, we surrender, means it is now God's responsibility to take care. So, what about, so therefore for a sannyasi, for the maintenance of the body, Krishna has to also take care. Now, what about those who are engaged in their family and they are serving society? Here Krishna says, I will also take care of all your necessities. How? By also inspiring you with the right effort in the right direction. Because you remember in chapter 10 also he said that those people who worship me, I will provide the knowledge also for them. I will guide them with the right knowledge also. So there will arise in them the knowledge to follow the right path also. So in many ways, now if we look upon it, a sannyasi has got no security. Has he got any bank balance? No. Has he got any possessions? No. But yet, is he worried? He's not worried at all. But a person who has got everything, who has got money, who has got possessions, who is the most worried person? The one who has the possession. Who has the maximum number of bodyguards? The richest people have the most number of bodyguards. Why? Insecurity. The more you have, the more insecure you become, isn't it? So it is not that, yes.
Yet there are sannyasis who actually behave like God.
Yes, behave like God.
Yeah. I mean, in the sense that they
call God man.
But when they dress like that, they want people to touch their feet and
money.
Think that they're making a lot of money.
It's a good business now. Spirituality has become very good.
And they have luxurious ashrams with swimming pool and Vaikuntha.
I think they are not really sannyasis.
They are businessmen sannyasis. See, why? Why is that? Again, remember the gunas, we talked about the gunas. If the gunas are rajasic, the gunas are tamasic. By putting on an orange robe will not make me sattvic. My intention is still how to make money to lead a comfortable life. So I can do it through business, I can do it through religion also. I can turn religion into a business. So the most important thing is not the outer garb, is the gunas. If we have sattvic gunas, we won't abuse religion. And there are many great sannyasis who are not interested in money, in fame, etc. At the same time, there are so-called sannyasis who are pursuing business through spirituality. Because, so we should not blame sannyas, we should blame the gunas of the person and what is the motive of the person.
Right. Somebody who is leading a normal life and running a business can have sattvic gunas.
Oh yes, of course.
And,
yeah.
And
do more service to society.
Be serving society much more than these gods.
Yes, exactly. So what does it tell us? Security is not external. Security is a state of mind. If we have that much of faith in God, if we are focused in God, we don't have to worry about the external. It is the internal which brings security of mind. I can have everything and then I feel insecure. And yet I can have nothing but I feel totally secure. So what does it tell me? It is not the possessions, it's not the external, it is the internal state of mind. So therefore, Krishna says, Yoga Shema, you don't have to tell me, you don't have to keep on reminding me every day as though I forgot about you already. You are my devotee, you have surrendered to me, he is giving us a promise here. Yoga Shema Vahamiham, I will take care of you. In Vishnu Sahasranama, two of the names of Vishnu, there are 1,000 names, no, Vishnu Sahasranama, 1,000 names of Vishnu. Two of the names, one name is called, God is called Kama Deva. Kama is desire, Deva is God. Meaning what? He is the very God who will fulfill your desires. But you don't have to ask him also, he will fulfill. If you are a true devotee, he will fulfill all your desires also. And the other name for God here, also given in Vishnu Sahasranama, is Kama Phala. He is the protector of whatever you have. Kama, the desires, Phala, whatever you have acquired, he will also protect. So he will know what is best, what you need, what you don't need. If you just surrender and leave things up to him, what he is telling you, you don't have to ask him. He will know what to provide for you and what not to give you also. Because sometimes we think what we want might end up even harming us or troubling us more. A very simple story is of Raja Dasarath. What he didn't have? He didn't have everything he had. What he didn't have? Children he didn't have. So what he did? He did prayers to get that Amrit which he gave to the queens so that they could have children. And what did the children do to him? Did they bring in happiness or misery? Misery. They caused his own death. So sometimes we ask for things, we really don't know whether they will. We think they are good for us, but they might be, end up destructive for us. So therefore, in fact today, one devotee, of, a Sai devotee called me, he told me this beautiful story. It's a true story. He went to Puttaparthi with a group of devotees. And there was this lady, elderly in her 60s or 70s, who had a heart condition. She didn't tell him that she was having a heart condition. So when they reached Puttaparthi, they were climbing up some stairs to go to the top of the building or something. On the first floor, she had a heart attack itself there. And lucky there was a doctor in that group, and he managed to sort of revive her and rush her to that. They have a hospital in Puttaparthi that provides free medical services. So they rushed her there. So she recovered the next day. You know what she said? She said few days before she was in Bangalore, she went to visit a relative of hers who was warded in one of the most luxurious hospitals. And then when she visited a relative, she said, you're so lucky, you know, that you're in such a luxurious hospital, you know. And what happened? She had to go to a hospital also. And next day, somebody came to visit her in the Puttaparthi hospital. He told her, sister, you're so lucky, you're in such a beautiful hospital. And you know, it's a luxurious hospital and there are no charges, you should feel so lucky. What happened? Next day he had eye infection, he also was warded. So this is the story he told me. It's a true story. So sometimes we ask for something, we don't know what we are asking for also. We think it's for our benefit, but it turns out to be for our own destructive needs. So, Kama phala, what you have, God says, don't worry, I will protect what you have also. And what you don't have also, I will get that for you also. So, what does it tell us? Basically, surrender. Surrender and leave everything in God's hands. It's not easy, but it is something that God is promising us also. So, this is the verse number 22. Now we come to verse number 23. So in the previous verse, here in verse 22, Krishna says, those who worship me. Now, therefore, we have to be very careful to understand, those who worship me means me is who. So now he explains further in verse number 23. He says, ye api anya devata bhakta. Anya devata, other deities. There are not everybody worships Krishna also. So here Krishna is saying, those who worship me only, I'll take care of them. That means what? If you worship Ganesha, Shiva, Devi, sorry for you, he won't take care. But no, he says, he explains here. He says, ye api, even those who bhakta, the devotees of what? Anya devata, or who worship any other devas also. What happens? But very important, he gives the quality here. What type of devotee is talking about again? Shraddhaya Anvita Yajante. Anvita means they are endowed with what? Shraddha, with faith. And Yajante, thus they worship other devatas but with faith. So faith is very, very important. So faith means what? Adi Shankaracharya has defined Shraddha as faith in scriptures. Faith in Guru, faith in God, and faith in yourself. That is what we call faith. Have faith in the words of the scriptures, have faith in your Guru, have faith in God, have faith in yourself. So, but those people, out of ignorance, now he is speaking about those people, you will see what type of ignorance. They are ignorant of what? They worship other devatas, but he says in reality, while they are worshipping other devatas, te api eva mam yajanti. Yajanti means worship mam. They are worshipping me actually. Now again we have to understand what is this me. So what Krishna is saying in verse 22, those who worship me, I will take care of their needs. Verse 23 is saying, those who worship other devatas are ignorant of the fact that when they worship other devas, they are actually worshipping me. So who is this me now? Brahman, the absolute, infinite, unmanifest Brahman. Here the word me does not mean Krishna. We have to be very careful to understand this. Otherwise we get confused. We think only worshipping Krishna, he will take care of us. If I worship other devatas, indirectly I am worshipping Krishna. No. By worshipping any form of God, indirectly you are worshipping the supreme, absolute, formless Brahman. So here me does not refer to Krishna me, but refers to Brahman. But because these people are ignorant, they are worshipping that particular devta, not understanding that all your prayers are going to Brahman. So that's why he says, avidhi purvakam, their worship is considered improper worship. Improper why? Because of ignorance. What are they ignorant of the fact that whatever form of God they are worshipping, that God is not receiving their worship, that God is not granting their worship, but actually everything is being received and granted by that Brahman, that one formless. So that's why we have so much of conflict also sometimes between Shiva Bhaktas, Krishna Bhaktas, Devi Bhaktas, Ganesha Bhaktas. Everybody says mine is the true God. Why? If you read the Puranas, Lord Shiva is described as all-pervading, all-powerful, almighty, eternal. If you read Devi Puranas, the same description is given. If you read Srimad Bhagavatam, which is a Purana for Lord Krishna, the same description is given. So really, who is the true God now? All are basically forms of that one formless God. Therefore, whatever prayers we are offering to whichever God, understand that your prayers are ultimately going to that one formless God. And who is granting your prayers and wishes? It is that one formless God. Through the Devta you worship, you are receiving your, what you call, your prayers. So
does this apply to other religions also? Worshipping a God in other religions, does that also go to Brahman?
In that case, I see that people worshipping money and all this, and then they do slaughter.
Oh, the goats and cows and goats and all that, yeah.
And they can't.
See, okay, first let me come back to your question. So you're saying that all other religions, does it mean that, see, all other religions also accept there's only one God. So ultimately, actually, all of us are praying to that only one formless God. Whichever religion
you
follow,
but
you're calling it by different name. Right? So what he's saying here, the same thing, that one formless God which has no form, is that only one God. Whether you worship from whichever way you want, it is not wrong, but understand it is going to that one formless God. Now, coming back to your question where people slaughter things and their wishes are granted, yes, it is tamasic type of worship. It is mentioned in chapter 17 that there is a thing called tamasic type of worship where people do this type of gross type of worship and their prayers are answered. So, because they are worshipping with faith. But ultimately, we have to get out of this type of worship. Because it is not the right type. It is in tamasic type nature. Same way, like rajasic type of worship is worship of for selfish needs. Until we come to sattvic type of worship. So, all these three types of worships are described in chapter 17. Also. Okay. Yes.
If verse 23 says, saying to Krishna, is it saying it is improper worship, or is it saying if you worship with finite demands or requests, then it's
No, the worship is not improper. The worship is proper, but he says the ignorance is that they don't understand that the worship is actually directed at the formless. Their level is they are thinking that this devata, I am directing the worship, this devata is giving me what I want. But what they don't understand, no matter which devata they worship, ultimately it is a formless God which is accepting and granting your wishes.
But the problem is that our level,
yeah.
I mean, it's only the God in the form that you
correct.
Worship to.
Correct.
If you ask me to pray to a formless God,
right.
I'm lost.
Correct. So that means we all start with that. But we should not end with that. We should all start with worship of form. Because the same question Arjuna will ask in chapter 12. Should I worship you in form or should I worship you as formless? And Krishna says, no, you worship me in form. Why we should worship in form, that he explains in chapter 12. So Arjuna asks exactly the same question. Should I worship you in form or as formless? Which is a more superior devotee? He says, worship me with form. And why he explains why you have to start worshipping with form until you are ready to come to the formless. And then even we look at the examples of sages like Adi Shankaracharya, Ramana Maharishi, although they believed in the formless, they still did not stop worship of the form. Yeah, they still carried on, but they understood that the form they were worshipping is a representation of the absolute formless. So the worship of form is not wrong. Is our understanding that has just got to be changed.
So we have to understand that whatever form it is, it's actually we are worshipping the Brahman.
Correct, exactly. So once we have that understanding, we can carry on worshipping the form with the understanding that actually it is a formless that is receiving and granting my wishes. Then use any form that is favorable to you and carry on worshipping. It's nothing is wrong. Because we've seen the examples of Shankara, we've seen the examples of Ramakrishna Paramahansa.
How about worshipping fire? The
same again, form. Everything is form of that one unmanifest.
So like the symbol also?
Same again. All symbols, all restricted by time and space.
Anything which is
restricted. It's by time and space.
You can take a piece of wood and
same also. Yeah, whatever. As long as you, again, it's your motive, motive with what you are worshipping, and realize what you are worshipping. Actually. Yes, sorry, you have something.
I'm very confused. Let's say I go to a temple.
Okay.
And I pray to Ganesha, I say Ganesha's mantra. Then, next I go to the main deity, I say, let's say, Murugan, I say his mantra.
Right, right.
Then I go to Amma and Uvido and I say her mantra. Okay, now I say three mantras.
Correct, exactly. You said it exactly.
Three different types of mantra.
Correct.
And then same.
Your prayer is going to the same. It's just like if you go to a government office, you submit your form through counter 1, counter 2, or counter 3. Where is the form going? To that officer, the main officer who is going to receive your application and approve. Only thing we decide, we want to go counter 1 or counter 2 or counter 3.
Maybe online.
Oh, maybe online. Oh, maybe online.
But really, this is an issue. You know, you go to a big temple and you have so many small temples
inside.
And you go and you say, you go everywhere.
Right.
So, basically, I think it's like a buffet.
But after knowing this, you have to
eat.
See, after knowing this, now your realization is different. Now you still pray to the same. You can still go to the three deities, say the three mantras, but understand that actually my prayer is going to Brahman. So, a worship of deities is not wrong. It is our understanding of where our prayers are going.
They are not separate.
They are not separate. They are actually all part of one formless God.
Who created the division? All the different departments.
Okay. Okay, very good question. 20 of you go to a food court. Okay, in a food court there are 30 different varieties. Where will 20 people go? 20 different directions. All 20 are not going to go in one food channel, right? 20 will go. So because of our sattvic, rajasic, tamasic gunas, because of our different ways, different type of desires, different way we perceive things, therefore you have multiple religions, therefore you have multiple gods. And you ask somebody, you say, I like Shiva. Somebody, I love Ganesha. I love Devi. But actually we are all praying to that one and same God. Yes. Again, we come back to your motive and with what intention you are praying. So again, I say going to temples is not wrong. I go to temples. Going to temples is not wrong. Praying to an idol is not wrong. But try to understand where your prayer is going. So we use that idol to offer our prayers as a form, but understand all your prayers are going to that one formless. Now it's going to take time, it's not going to be overnight, but slowly we got to start training our mind. And that does not mean that even when we come to accept God as formless, we stop going to temple. We still carry on rituals, we still carry on prayers, but we understand where our prayers are going.
Somehow or other, I think understanding rituals don't look that significant in our own mind. This kind of understanding, whether you go around three times or whether you go four times,
correct.
All these things.
Now, the thing is, when you do a ritual with the idea of attaining something, then understand you have to follow all the rules and regulations. But when you are doing a ritual with a total surrender for God, then you don't have to worry about rules and regulations anymore. Then they don't apply. But when there is something that you want to attain, then you have to follow all the rules and regulations, otherwise you don't get what you want.
Like the altar at home, we don't need so many different deities there.
That's why I say it all depends on you, what you want to do. But having a deity, there's nothing wrong. Having multiple deities, also nothing wrong. We can pray to all the deities and understand. That's why we don't have to fight with each other. Shiva is great, Ganesha is great, you know, Krishna is great. No, all are one and the same. Understand, we can worship all the gods, but understand the prayer is going to that one Brahman.
That means, who came up with this idea? Murugan has hiccup hours, Ganesha has this mushka, and Shiva has this. Who came up with all this?
Ved Vyasa. He wrote all the Puranas.
How did he see this?
Same. So, Ved Vyasa also received these divine revelations. And he wrote out the Puranas, 18 Puranas. So you have Shiv Purana, Vishnu Purana, Krishna's one is called Srimad Bhagavatam, So all the various Puranas, there is Kanda Purana, all these are there, and all the description of the deity, what is the vehicle, what are his pastime, his stories. Why they wrote this? Because we need something first to attract our mind, our senses to focus on. So here's a beautiful form of Krishna, here of Ganesha, here the nice stories about Ganesha. You know, Ganesha's this, Ganesha's sweet, bhajans of Ganesha, stories of Ganesha. What is all this designed to? To attract your mind towards Ganesha. Then from there you progress on with knowledge and understand whether I worship Ganesha or Shiva or Krishna or whatever, actually all my prayers are going to that one unmanifest. But then again, that does not mean I stop worshipping. I carry on worshipping with the different understanding now. Right? I understand the manifest form is just a symbol of the unmanifest. Somebody want to ask something about this now?
Mainly during the Bhavli Puja.
Yeah.
Where we worship Lakshmi.
Yeah.
That's not going to make us, may not make us rich.
No, if your intention or you want to be rich, yes. Again, the intention, right? I am asking for this. So I follow the prayers and follow and my business prospers. Then I say, Lakshmi has brought me this money. But actually, Brahman is granted your wishes. But fine, if again, all of us are different level. If you tell the person going to temple and scold him and say, don't go temple, you are doing injustice to that person. He is at that level, let him carry on. Right? Don't disturb that person. Let them carry on. If you go to temple and you worship and you say, I'm worshipping Brahman, fine, you do that. But don't go and disturb other people and say, you're worshipping Brahman, what are you doing all this? You make people more confused there. Okay, everybody has got to go through their own level of understanding and then come to that understanding that actually God is one formless.
Brother, what happens? After listening to all this, example, I go and pray the Navakarapu. You know, sometimes you go around, you forget, you know, how many rounds are there.
Right. So always first question your motive. What am I doing it for? If I'm doing it to attain God, then you don't have to worry about all rules and regulations. But if you're doing it with a particular motive to attain something, then you better follow the rules and regulations. Now, if you have nothing to ask for God, you go there, you put your hands together and say, Sarve Bhavantu Sukhina, thank you God for giving me everything. Then there is no routine and all for you to follow. You know, but if you have something that you want, then there is so many other routines and rituals and rules and regulations that you have to follow.
If you're just praying for the welfare of your family, does that also mean
selfish?
It's a selfish prayer if you're praying because only for your family. So what the scripture is telling us, slowly learn to open the boundary of your...
Yes, I understand that, yeah. But does it need a ritual or...
No, yeah, but your prayer is a form of a ritual also, you know, it's a motive, it's a motive. It's what, sorry, is?
It's not wrong.
No, it's not wrong. That's why I say it's not wrong to pray. It all depends on what, now supposing if I have problems, and I cannot solve my problems, what do? I go and pray to God and ask Him. Because I've tried every means, I cannot solve my problem, I go and pray to God. It is not wrong. But as I said earlier also, you keep on going and going and asking and asking and asking until that time you have to come to the realization, Lord, I put it in your hands. Whatever happens, I leave it to your good hands. That is called total surrender. It is not going to come overnight. It is not going to come in a few days. It may even take several lifetimes also. But that is our ultimate aim. Okay.
So you can pray to get to the stage where you can.
Sorry, you can?
You can pray to have the kind of faith where you can surrender.
Yes.
The faith itself.
So, you can pray for what? For purity of mind, for spiritual guidance, and those kind of things. So, we turn our motive of prayer. The prayer is still there, the ideal is still there, the same mantras you chant, but now your motive has changed now already. Right? Okay. So now, here he has explained that it is okay that if you want to worship any other Deva also, right? As long as we have faith, you are worshipping, but the only ignorance is we do not know where our prayers are going. The ignorance is not worshipping idols, the ignorance is we do not know ultimately where our prayers are ending. So now in verse 24 he explains further on the same concept that whatever devotee, whatever deity you worship, Krishna says here, Aham Sarva Yajnanam Bhokta. Aham, I am the Bhokta. I am the receiver. Now again the word I here is not Krishna I, it means Brahman I, the formless, unmanifest, eternal God. So here he is saying, I as the formless, eternal God am the Bhokta, I am the receiver actually of all your prayers, no matter from which deity you offer to. Sarva, all forms of yajna, all forms of worship, rituals, whatever prayers you do, every form of ritual, worship and prayer, Brahman here, Krishna says, I as Brahman will receive your prayers also, no matter to which devata you offer. And I said the same example, if you go to a government office, it doesn't matter which counter you hand in your form, ultimately it has to go to the chief officer to receive and approve. So why he says here, who is this? He identifies himself now. Who is this Bhokta? He is the Prabhu, the Lord. The word Prabhu has got a very deep meaning. In fact, there are multiple meanings for this word Prabhu. But one of the meanings is, he is the ultimate master, the controller of the whole creation. So this is where our prayers are going to. The one called Prabhu, the one who is the ultimate master and controller of the whole creation. That means what? He has got unlimited powers to fulfill all your desires. Whatever you ask for, he has got the power. So, but he says, Na tu mam abhijananti. Abhijananti means they do not know, the devotees are not aware that whatever prayers they are offering to the devatas, the actual person receiving and approving is the Brahman, the formless God. So they do not know. In reality, tatvena, what is the real nature of my highest real nature? That is the infinite, unmanifest Lord of all. That's why earlier in chapter 7, he already told us, when he says now they do not know my real nature, in chapter 7, he told us what? He has got two natures. One is the lower nature, which is finite, which we can worship, which we can see with our senses, we can interact with our senses, that is one nature. Then he says, I have another higher nature, which is the infinite, which is the all-pervading consciousness, formless. So now he is talking about the word tattvena. Tattvena means my real nature. He is not talking now about the form nature, he is talking about the formless nature. These devotees who worship with form do not understand my higher or formless nature. Thus, out of ignorance they worship, but still, earlier in chapter 7 he says, no matter which way they approach me, I will still grant their worship. Whether they approach from whichever deity, I will still grant their worship. So the I here is the Brahman I, the formless, absolute God also. Therefore, what he says here, now to those people who don't realize where their worship is going, to the formless God, and they worship this God as form, he says, Atha Chavanti. If you look at the last line, Atha means therefore, Chavanti, they fall. Now what does he mean by here, they fall? To know the formless God, if you understand, that means what is our goal? If we have come to understand the formless God, then what is our goal called? Moksha. If we don't understand that goal and we are pursuing finite goals, thus he says when you worship for finite goals, what happens? They fall. When he says fall means what? They fail to attain moksha. Because they are only pursuing finite goals. So here fall does not mean spiritual fall. Fall here means they do not come to that infinite goal, moksha. So through our worship, we have to understand that our prayers are going there to the infinite God. So they fall into the cycle of samsara. What is cycle of samsara? Punarapi jananam, punarapi maranam. Asking for this, attaining this, and then going back in the same cycle again and again and again. So that's why I say we can go on asking. The question is, we go on asking, we'll go on receiving. And this is will be our cycle. Asking, receiving, and going on and on in this cycle of birth and death. Unless we come to the highest understanding. So, this is what he wants to explain basically. That all our worship is going to that one Brahman. Okay. Now, therefore, what it tells us that as human beings, we are all gifted with the power of free will. We can make a choice. We are gifted with this power of free will. Freedom for what? Freedom to choose our goals of life. Since we are given this freedom to choose our goals of life, what should we do? Choose wisely. Right? You're given the freedom to choose, so use that freedom wisely. And therefore, God as a silent witness has given us various paths and how to attain these goals. See, but He does not determine what goal you want. What goal you choose is your own choice. But He has given us various kind of paths to achieve whatever we want. You want success in marriage, there are certain prayers you can do. You want success in business, there are certain prayers you can do. You want the right children, there are certain prayers you can do. All that He has given in the Vedas, all are there. The question is, and then on top of that, what He has done? He has given us the knowledge of the highest absolute God. Now, the choice is yours. What is it that you want? You make the choice. Which path you want? So, Krishna has said in the last verse, those who worship devas, other devas means what? Who make choices of the finite goals in life. Other devas represent finite goals in life. If we make choices for finite goals, we pursue those goals. That is our freedom to choose. And then what happens, he says, they are constantly stuck in this cycle of samsara. So, according to our gunas, now we understand one important thing here. We will worship according to our own gunas. Why we worship this particular deity? Why some people take to worship of killing animals and offering to God? There are various types of what we call nature of the person. According to their nature, they will follow that worship. So here, now what he wants to tell us here is, Devarata Devanyanti. Devarata means those who are the devotees of gods, various type of gods. Yanti means they will attain the gods. Worshippers of gods will attain the gods. Now what does he mean by this? The word here, gods, is given in plural. So, he is not referring to Brahman. He is referring to the plurality of gods. Meaning what? Those who have various kind of finite desires. Because here the word gods represents all kinds of finite desires. Variety of finite desires. So, what is telling here? Those who worship for fulfillment of finite desires will attain the finite desires. If you keep on worshipping for finite desires with faith, you will get what you want. But that means what? You are not going to attain moksha. You will be continuously caught in this cycle of worshipping for finite desires. So he says, those who worship the devas will certainly go to the devas. Meaning, those who worship for finite goals will certainly get their finite goals. They will get what they worship for. And then he says, the second type of person, Pitravrita Pitrinyanti. There are those, Pitravrita means those who worship the mains, the ancestors. They believe in this worship of ancestors. Again, for what purpose? They want to attain all the blessings from the ancestors. So, they are worshipping again with intention, with the motive. To attain again what? Finite goals. Again, they worship their ancestors. Therefore, ancestral worship is not wrong. It depends, are you doing it as one of your Pancha Mahayagnas? It is our duty to worship the ancestors. But some of us worship with the purpose of what? May they bless us with money, may they bless us with fame, or may they bless us with property or whatever. So again, he's talking about those who worship the ancestors with the purpose of attaining something, they will get what they worship for. So whatever shradham, whatever tarpanam prayers we do, we will also get that also. Whether you worship the devas or whether you worship your ancestors. Now, that means what? This is the very rajasic nature of the person. The purpose of worshipping is with a motive to attain something. And you will get it. That's what he says. And then he says, there are another type of people, which just now sister mentioned, in the third line here. Bhuteja bhutani yanti. Bhuteja means worship of beings. Yanti, they will attain that very being. Meaning what? This bhutas means ghosts, evil spirits, rakshasas. There are people who do this type of worship also. So either they do these prayers to harm others, or also they do these prayers to attain some finite goals like power, position. They worship this kind of what we call evil spirits. And that's what Krishna says. They go to this evil spirit means what? Ultimately, they will end up in that very nature. They will end up as the evil spirits. You worship these evil spirits and all, you will end up like them also. You are caught in that same cycle also. Right? So, in the Upanishads also, there is a beautiful line that mentions, Tam yatha yatha upasate, Tam yatha yatha upasate, as you worship, Tatha bhavati, you will become such. As you worship, you will take on the very nature of what you worship also. You will go in the direction of what you worship. So now, he has listed three different types of worships. Those who worship devas to pursue the finite goals, those who worship ancestors to pursue finite goals, and those who worship evil spirits to attain finite goals. Where they will go in that direction. But he says, Matyajino, the last line, Matyajino, those who worship me, again, who is this me? Brahman. Those who worship Brahman, Yanti Mam Api, they will attain to Brahman. They will take on the very nature of Brahman, which is the very sattvic worship, pure worship. Now, when he says they take on the nature of Brahman, what is he trying to tell us? When our mind is pure, with purity we worship God, not asking for anything also, only we want to attain God. He says they take on my nature. Now, when you see a person, you say he is a very godly person. He is a very saintly person. What do you mean? What type of qualities does a person have? Example? Calmness, humility, love, compassion, right? Non-violence, isn't it? All these we call what? Godly qualities. So you acquire such kind of qualities. You become godly in nature. You become saintly in nature. So that's what he's saying. Whatever you pursue in that worship, in that direction you go. But if you worship God, the infinite, to just attain that God, then he says you become godly in nature.
Brother, yes. Does it mean that if you worship Kali, for example, in a very aggressive kind of object,
what is your motive? Motive is very important. Worship Kali, Ramana Maharishi worship Kali. What was his motive? Ramakrishna Paramahansa, right? Worship Kali. What was his motive? He already was worshipping the absolute unmanifest. So it is not what you're worshipping, what is the motive in what you're worshipping. Then that what you worship, you go in that direction. So if you worship for the purpose of destroying others, then you will also attain that kind of nature also.
What happens if you worship not for destroying others, but your own self-esteem?
So again, what you worship for, that is what you will get. Right?
Let's see. We attain the qualities of the
Mahakali. Qualities of what?
The
no, you are worshipping for what purpose?
Maybe the welfare of the.
Okay, so that's what you'll get. You'll get welfare of your family. That's why he's saying what you worship, you go in that direction.
Because you are just not saying that in this world. It says that you attain the qualities of
that. That is if you worship the unmanifest And if you worship form without any motive, right, then you become the very nature, you acquire the qualities and ultimately you will merge with that. But if your worship is for wrong things, evil things, then you will acquire that kind of nature, that kind of quality, you go in that kind of direction also. So again, everything comes back to motive. Not what you are worshipping, but motive. So now the question is,
Right.
Okay. Okay. So, when we have the influence of all these planets, it is because we are already born with these prarabdha karmas. So, the astrologer will read your chart and tell you, you are under the influence of this planet. Why are you under the influence of this planet? Because you were already born with that particular type of prarabdha karmas. By looking at the planet influence, he will tell you basically what you are undergoing through, right? So now that means what? You are born with this prarabdha karmas, which is a result of your past actions. Now, prayers will help to dilute that dosha that you are suffering now. The prayers will help to dilute, provided you follow all the rules and regulations, number one. Number two, depending on how strong that dosha is, your prayers may be able to dilute 10%, 20%, 50%, do not know. So yes, prayer does help, it does help to dilute, but how much of it, nobody knows, because we do not know how strong is that dosha. If the dosha is mild, maybe it will totally dilute it. But if the dosha is very strong, part of it will be diluted. So prayer does help. With faith you pray, and whatever you are supposed to encounter, whether part of it is diluted. Right? There's nothing wrong again in praying for that. Right. Then you'll be prepared, that means you are prepared to accept whatever comes. Right? You must have that strength. That means just surrender everything and then just be prepared to accept whatever comes. So that strength, that inner strength must be there before we totally surrender. Right. Here gods does not mean here gods means your finite desires. We are not talking about the deities. The gods here in plural refers to finite desires. So if you are praying to whichever Ishta Devata, but your desire is for worldly things, that is what you will get. That means you won't get moksha. Okay, put it very simply. If you pray to Ganesha for moksha, you will get moksha. If you pray to Ganesha for bigger house, you get a bigger house. So it is not the deity, it is the motive that what you are praying for. The gods here does not represent the deity, it represents your motives, for what motives you are praying for. If you pray to Shiva for moksha, you get moksha. If you pray to Shiva for happy marriage, you will get a happy marriage. So your motive is very important. That's what he's saying. What you pray for, in that direction you will go.
So we're talking about temples are there, basically it's for you to align to your Ishta Devata, whichever temple you want to
pray. Right, exactly.
But at the end of the day is a motive.
Your motive, yes, will determine your direction.
So my second question is that we just say that you have the ultimate Brahman, which is formless. Why is there no Hindu temple that
which is dedicated to the formless?
Yeah, to say that we directly go to the formless, but they only have temples really which are presenting on the Ishtadeva, as you are Brahma and Vishwa, Vishnu, or even Ganesha. Any other?
Your question is why there is no temple that is dedicated to the formless.
Because pictures is telling that
is what we are doing now. isn't it? Knowledge, being fixing our mind to formulas is only through one way, through knowledge. It is only knowledge that will remove all this ignorance of what we have about God. So what we are doing now, actually we are in a temple, we are doing Jnana Yoga. We are praying actually to the Brahman actually. So temple is there with the form, manifest form. But when you come to knowledge, basically you have to study, to come to Brahman, you have to go through knowledge. That's why you have to come ultimately to Jnana Yoga. What we are doing now is Upasana Yoga. Ultimately you have to come to Jnana Yoga.
Question. Now, our lives in this world, we are interconnected. You see, husband, wife, children, brothers, sisters, everything.
Correct.
Now, something has happened to me. So, I have a problem.
Right.
Now, I pray. My prayers will be help me, and maybe it will help others also who are connected with me.
Right, right.
Sometimes there is a problem with my child, let's say.
Right.
Now it affects him or her more,
right.
But it also affects
correct.
The other members of the family.
Right.
Now we say that it is all because of past karma.
Right, right.
Now whose karma? Everybody who's in the chain or?
You remember I told you about the story of meeting railway compartments. That is what we are all doing. We meet our family in a particular journey. We have certain interaction with them. And then after that, everybody's got their own direction to go. So what purpose we have to meet together to solve, settle our past karmas, for that purpose we are there to meet. Let's say for example, in your past life somebody was very sick. You took care of that person right to the end. Now you already form one karmic bond there already. So what happens in this life now? That person comes back as your son to look after you now. Because he's got a karma to pay back to you now. You see, so everything some way or other is interconnected. We understand that, then we don't get attached to that. We understand it's only a purpose we've come together to settle our karmas and then go our separate ways. That's why Shankara says, think, who was your wife in the past life? You had a different wife, different child. This life, you have a different wife, different child. When you leave this, you go to a next life, different wife, different child again. So we are passing from one life to another life, different setup, different family, different neighbors. Everything is different for us. Why? Because to settle some of our karma.
But even the hundreds that die, the plane crash?
Same again. So all plane crash or earthquakes or whatever it is, all their destiny. So same thing here in the Mahabharata war. That's why what Krishna said in chapter 11. I am Kala. I am out here to kill all the soldiers. Their destiny is done already. They have time to go already. So they have been brought all to the battlefield to go already. Right.
So if the plane crashes, I think all those people have been collected together because they're supposed to go. What if you're in the wrong place at the wrong time?
No, it cannot be the wrong place. It cannot be the wrong place at the wrong time. You read about people who rush to the airport, they miss their flight, and then the plane crashes.
There's a terrorist attack and the people who are there, they
yeah.
were destined to go.
Yeah, yeah. So
it's extremely determined.
Yeah, you cannot be the wrong place at the wrong time. Okay.
Brother, I'm still a bit confused about.
It's good you're a bit confused. You're very much confused when I have a bit
confused. Now, this formless prayer, from what we are learning, it looks like it's superior to prayer performance.
Your formless prayer is looking superior to prayer with form. No, wrong. Wrong. Motive again, come back to motive. You pray to a form, but your mind is connected to the formless. I know my prayer is going to Brahman. Pray to any form you want.
So what happens if I don't want to pray to a form? I
okay.
want to do like a meditation.
Right, fine.
Is that
If you reach that understanding that I am now meditating on the formless, right? And you experience that Sachit Ananda within, by just closing your eyes, you experience the same Sachit Ananda that you pray to a form, that means you're already blissed, immersed with the formless already. But it's actually an experience. That's why ultimately you all have to come to meditation. Knowledge again is only telling you about the formless. It, you have not reached your spiritual goal. So from knowledge you have to come ultimately to meditation. So with meditation you experience that Sachit Ananda, then you already reach that formless. The three? Oh yes, yes, correct. And Arupa Bhakta, yes. So ultimately all have to come to meditation. That is realization of the formless. The knowledge is only pointing you to that. Meditation is a realization of the formless. So right now we should not get confused. We should pray to the form, but try to understand our prayers are going to the formless. As a start, slowly that realization will come. Step by step. Okay. Yes? Actually Christians do have the cross. Or is it Catholics? You see again you must... Okay, I'll answer that question. Which is the oldest religion in the world? So when Hinduism came first to mankind, we were already at the very, how you say, initial level. If you go back to the Vedas, the very early man did not understand what is God. So how did early men worship God? Through the elements, the stars, the rain, the moon, etc. And then slowly they came to this realization. That's why the Vedas go from, what is it, Samhita. If you go back to my very first lesson, Samhita, to, what was it called, Samhita, Brahmanas. Brahmanas is where what they worship, they started offering, made offerings to those what they worship. For example, they worship the sun. So initially they used to sing hymns to worship the sun, the moon. Then came the second phase of the religion called the Brahmanas, where they started offering, making material offerings to the sun, to the fire, to the moon, etc. And then came the third development of our religion, which is called Aranyakas, where they retired to the forest and they started contemplating on what are they worshipping. And then they come to the final part, which is called the Upanishads, which is what we are reading right now, where they realize that actually it is not all these different forms, but there is only one formless. So our religion actually has gone through that whole development, right? Okay. Now, coming to Kaliyug, that was in Satyug, Tretayug, Dwaparayug, all that happened. Huh? Coming to Kaliyug, it has been predicted that people are, how you say, people are not, how you say, not prone to knowledge. They want quick, instant results. So that knowledge part has diminished and diminished and diminished slowly through the yugas. And now in Kali Yuga, people want instant results. They want to worship, get quick results. Very few people are interested to pursue this path of knowledge. So that's why Krishna said in chapter 4, verse 1, he said what? I gave that knowledge to Surya Bhagwan at the beginning of creation. Surya Bhagwan gave it to his son Manu gave it to Ikshvaku. And then what happened? Somewhere along the way it got lost. So why Krishna says, I took this incarnation towards the end of Dwapara Yuga. I knew Kali Yuga was coming. People will be less and less interested in knowledge. So I've come to re-establish that very same knowledge which I gave in the Vedas. So, therefore, what we are studying now is the knowledge part. But unfortunately, many people have stuck on to the rituals. They don't want to move on to the knowledge. So, that's why our religion has got both. It has got rituals, it has got knowledge. Now, healthy practice would be to start with rituals, go to knowledge, but you can maintain both. There's nothing wrong. Because now with knowledge, you understand the rituals you're doing, who you're praying to, where your prayers are going to. But the problem is many people start with knowledge and end with knowledge. They start with rituals and end with rituals. They don't come out of the rituals. And unfortunately, this is where, sad to say, our temples have failed us. Because they promote the rituals, but not the knowledge. So now, like you all are coming for this class, or you're going for Bal Vikas class, or going to Chinmaya Mission, or whatever, this is where you're receiving the knowledge and understanding about your religion. So that does not mean you stop worship. You carry on worship, but with the better understanding what you're worshipping. Okay? So our religion is born through that transformation, and there are two parts of our religion. There's the prayers, rituals, and there's the knowledge.
So
is that okay? Is that clear?
Wondering why they are so Chayan and us.
So, no, then okay. Now the other religions all came after Hinduism, right? So they basically progress on with knowledge and left behind the rituals. But again, if you look at every religion, it has rituals, but not as extensive as Hinduism, right? Because all other religions came later and they took up the idea of the one formless God.
They do have rituals. They do have.
They have. Yeah, they do have.
So actually, connected with what you just said, so in a way, they are more evolved.
Yes.
Hinduism evolved from worship of elements to understanding of the formless.
Correct.
But these have started with understanding of the formless.
Because they came later. They came later.
Yes, of course they came later.
Yeah,
they grew from Hinduism.
Right.
But they have now reached the stage where they are
more focusing on knowledge.
More focusing on knowledge.
It's true, it's true. It's like Islam, Christianity, etc. They're all focusing a lot on knowledge. And this is where I think we have got to come back to the very heart of our religion, the root of our religion, which is knowledge, understanding. We have strayed away from that. We have to come back to this. I think the most important is we do not have to worry about that, but what's most important is we have to understand as Hindus to come back to the core of our religion, which is the Upanishads. And the Bhagavad Gita is the cream of the Upanishad. So once we understand the Bhagavad Gita, we understand the real nature of God. And then we carry on worshipping with the different understanding. So we are coming back slowly to our the root cause of our, the root part of our religion. Okay? Okay, so I think we don't have enough time. Okay, so now the question is, what is the correct method of worship, which is what Krishna is going to define in this next verse 26. Since he says that worship of gods, you go to the gods, worship of what you call these mains, the ancestors, you go towards ancestors. So what is the correct method of worship? And here he defines this, also is a very famous and very often quoted verse, Patram Pushpam Palam Toyam. Now, in the scriptures, therefore, there are two types of worshippers, as we have discussed, the Sakama and Nishkama Bhakta. Both are mentioned. Now, both of them do rituals. It is not that the Nishkama Bhakta does not do rituals. He also does rituals also. And for example, all the various rituals, the only difference between the Sakama and the Nishkama Bhakta is what? Motive. What is the result you want to attain? So depending on the results, if you want to attain certain worldly benefits, then as I said earlier, you have to follow rigorously all the rules, the regulations, how to perform the rituals, time of the puja, place of puja, which deity to propitiate, what are the right materials to offer. There's so much intricacies involved in the worship. If you want to get the material benefits, there are a lot of complex rituals for us to follow. But in Nishkama Bhakti, if you have no desire, you only want to attain God, then there are no rigid rules and regulations. If you follow, it's good. Even if you do not follow certain things, you're not able to follow, it's fine. Because the rules and regulations are only meant to give us the result of that worship. So in Nishkama Bhakti, there is what we call no rigid rules and regulations. Now, example, if you are chanting Vishnu Sahasranama, okay? If you are chanting to attain something, you say, I am going to chant Vishnu Sahasranama every day, 1000 names of Vishnu for the next 365 days. But you chant all the words wrongly. What happens? What you want, you don't get. But if you are chanting, you say, God, I want to get purification of mind. I want to attain you. That means there is what we call unconditional worship. Then you chant and you may make some mistakes, but you will still attain what you want because there is unconditional worship. So that's very important, that motive. The motive is very important, and that is what Krishna wants to stress here in verse number 26. So what he says, Yaha patram pushpam palam toyam bhaktya prayachati me. Now, if this bhakta, he says bhakta prayachati, offers to me what? Patram, leaf, pushpam, flower, phalam, fruit, toyam, water. Okay? Any of these four things, he says. If a bhakta offers to me this, but he says, whosoever offers to me a leaf, a flower, a fruit as water, again, first important point to note, here is, what is that? When he says here, what is the first thing that you should note from this? It's not expensive, okay, fine. What else? You can take all this from nature. What else?
Offered with devotion.
No, he's not said anything yet. Just from this thing first. Whoever offers me all these things, what should we notice from this?
Easily available.
Okay, easily available. What else?
Cheap.
Cheap. Free. Not cheap. Free.
Fruit is not free.
Fruit is not free. Unless you borrow from your neighbor.
Leaf is something which nobody wants.
Yeah, you can pluck.
He's satisfied.
Okay. What is the important thing? Has he mentioned which fruit?
No.
Which leaf?
No.
Which type of flower? What he says? Any flower, any leaf you can offer. So that means what? There is no restriction. Like if you are worshipping for a particular thing, you will notice they will tell you, bring this type of fruit, bring this type of leaf, bring this type of flower. But here is telling you, no. There is no restriction. But there is a clause there later we will come to. That means number one, he is not even specifying what fruit, what leaf, what water. Okay? That's one. Second, what else you should gain from this? No, he has not come to the motive. No, he's just talking about what is being offered. So from that, first we've understood that he does not even specify what is the... Second, how many fruits is he asking for? How many leaves? How many flower, fruit? Teaspoon of water also you offer. That means what? You don't have to go and offer thousands of flowers, thousands of fruit, 4 gallons of water on him and all that. So all that he is not asking, he is just saying, number one. Number two, nothing is specified, what type of fruit. So that's one. Now as we go along, now we understand what is important. Therefore, not the fruit you offer, not the leaf you offer, not the quantity you offer, but what is important. So, what type of bhakta here first he is talking about? A nishkama bhakta, offering with devotion. And if you look at chapter 7, if you go back to chapter 7, verse number 16, okay, where he mentioned the 4 types of bhaktas who worship him. So, from these 4 types of bhaktas, which type of bhakta do you think is referring here to?
Man of wisdom.
The man of wisdom, seeker of wealth, seeker of knowledge, or man in distress?
Man of wisdom.
See, Here we are talking about the man of wisdom is not being mentioned here, because the man of wisdom has already attained Jivan Mukti. Okay? So here is not talking about the man in distress or the one who is seeker of wealth. Here is talking about the Jignyashu Bhakta, the seeker of knowledge. That is the type of Bhakta. That means pure, unconditional, whose goal is only God. The man of wisdom has already understood the goal is God. He has already attained Jivan Mukta. So here specifically is talking about the Jignyashur Bhakta. Okay? And what is very important here, he mentions, I'll just finish off this because time is up, but chapter 9. Okay, chapter 9. Okay, so now, what is important therefore? He has not specified the fruit, the leaf, the quantity, everything not specified. But he says, Priyat Manaha, the pure-hearted person, the one who's offering, must be pure in heart. Priyat Manaha, such a devotee who is a person of purified mind. So why do we say this devotee, this bhakta, has a purified mind? Priyat Manaha. Why do we say that this devotee has got a purified mind? Number one, no motive. Number two, his desire is only for the finite goal. So mind is purified. It does not have the dirt of these worldly desires in his mind already. He is worshipping for that purpose. This is the type of bhakta that Krishna is identifying here. Okay? That who has no motive, who has no desire for worldly things, okay, only desire for the finite goals. He says, Tat aham asnami. That type of worship, asnami, I accept. I accept that offering. And why? Because bhakti uparidam, it is presented with love, with devotion. That means it is not what you offer, it is not what quantity you offer. The only important thing is what is your motive, with what emotion you offer. That Lord accepts. So this itself tells us the utmost devotion is the cause of God's acceptance of the prayer of the devotee. Right? And that is what will lead us to the finite goal. Whereas all other prayers that we do with motives, he accepts, but he gives you back that what you have asked for. So that's why neither is the quantity specified, neither is the type of fruit or flower specified. What he's specifying only is what is your motive. With purity of heart you offer, he accepts that. Okay? So we'll come back next week and discuss further on this verse. And I think we can, maybe we can even complete this chapter by next week. And with a prayer. Vasudeva sutam devam kansa chanura mardanam devaki paramanandam krishnam vande jagat guru. Thank you.